Hello and welcome to the Food and Drink Show here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. And of course, some of you may be listening online or on DAB. And we have the lovely Michaela also in the studio today. Hi, Michaela.
Oh, hi, Karen. Hello, everyone.
Now, we also have Michaela's young baby in the studio today as well, too. It's his first visit. So let's hope that he understands the language of radio.
So I do apologise in advance to anyone who listens. So if you hear strange noises in the background, that probably will be my son.
Exactly. He's in production. He's in production at less than 6 months old. But today on the Food and Drink Show, we have got, we've got a real eclectic mix. It's a little bit like Santa's stocking. We've got Martin Poole from Beyond, who's going to be telling us about this year's Advent Beach Hut calendar and all the delights that we can have along with mulled wine and mince pies. We have got Daryl Sutcliffe, who's going to be telling us about a very, well, exhausting activity that he's involved in, but he's going to be our nutritionist for any of you thinking of running marathons or doing anything of great high energy in 1918. He's going to be giving you some top tips on things to help you on your way. We will be taking a look at if you're thinking about Christmas presents. Well, we've got some ideas for you. And of course, being a food and drink show, it would be only fitting that we actually have a cookbook on the show. So all that and more here on the Food and Drink Show on Radio Reverb. Now, first up, let's say a very big hello to Martin Poole. Hello, Martin.
Hi there. Nice to be here.
So it's become a bit of an annual event now, you popping into the Food and Drink Show.
Yes, it's nice. And as has the Beach Hut Advent Calendar, it's our 10th annual event now. It's something we started in 2008. And I can't believe this will be our 10th time we've done this.
Wow. It's amazing.
Can I just ask, what was the inspiration on the first year?
It's one of those, you know, those light bulb moments. I was complaining to someone that we have a beach hut, that the doors open inwards. And it would be really nice if they opened outwards, because it would be easier, and just like an advent calendar. And I suddenly thought, oh yeah, we could actually do that. So we set things in motion. We got some people together who also had beach huts. And in actual fact, we don't open the doors usually, because there's usually so much art in the way, you can't move the doors anyway. But our official opening is always 5:30. And we've just had 10 years of an amazing creativity and all sorts of different artwork that I couldn't possibly have imagined when we first started this.
You try to give people guidelines what to do with them, or can just basically
we try not to, actually. We give them a theme. So this year the theme is aspects of the nativity. In previous years we've asked them to pick a Christmas carol, or last year the theme was just angels. But then within that they're just free to do whatever they want.
Okay.
The theme last year with angels, the wings, were incredible.
It was really good.
And it was angelic. There was something just incredible for any of our listeners that were walking along enjoying it all. It really was amazing. Now, from the very first year that I took part on the maiden voyage for the beach huts, now the standard of artwork and creativity is just enormous.
Well, see, that's because you started it off so high.
Well,
Karen
I'd
did
like
a fantastic, the very first
so.
Year,
oh,
she did this
Lord.
Amazing giant Christingle, which completely filled the hut. It was really, it's one of the ones that I remember.
It was a painted melon.
Yeah.
Painted melon
to get the size, the scale of an orange, you know, to be on a stand. And there was real bananas and big fruit, with a candle in the middle. And there was no wind on that night, so it meant we could have candles. So it has stayed in my memory as well as being very special. What has been, can you give me sort of something that you thought was absolutely amazing and just...
Wow, I think there's been so many. I think the ones that stand out are somebody once wrote a whole musical for the night, which was an hour-long musical they wanted to perform on the seafront. Really, sadly, it was a really bad weather night. So they had a terrible storm. And they had this cast of kind of a dozen people and about four people watching, which was really sad. Last year we had the world champion hoop gymnast.
I didn't see that one.
Who was doing a performance in front of the hut that was decorated with angels. And she had these amazing neon hula hoops that lit up. And so as she whirled them round, they made these most amazing shapes, kind of angel wing shapes. We've had theatre companies have done shows. We've had some of the ones that I've done myself, I've really enjoyed and been surprised at the responses to people. Mm. We did one where we blocked the front of the hut off as an advent calendar, had little doors that people could open and look in. And when they looked in, they realised they had become part of the nativity scene themselves. And this huge queue of people formed all the way down the seafront, waiting to poke their face in these doors to see themselves.
That's
in the nativity.
Incredible.
And, you know, the simplicity as well, too. What I love is the element of surprise. You never know till you go down each night. Mm. And the great thing is it's 5:30 to 6:30, so it's possible for everybody to go down, nip down and have a look. But you never know what you're going to get. And that is just the joy of it. It is a true Advent beach hut calendar. Mm. And then you've got those elements that you've mentioned. You don't know if you're going to get a still, calm night or you're going to get wind, rain, snow. There's been everything.
We've had all of those. And I'm very proud of the fact that over 10 years of doing this, we've never cancelled a night. Even when there've been storm warnings and people being told they shouldn't go down to the seafront, we've still been down there. And you still get a few hardy people turn up.
The show goes on. Mm. The show goes
on. And we try to encourage that because we have an incentive for people to come because people collect stamps. Like when you go to a coffee shop, you get a stamp and you get free coffee after you get half a dozen. Well, we do the same thing and whoever collects the most stamps gets a prize on Christmas Eve. This year it's a big hamper of chocolate from Divine Chocolate.
Lovely, a hamper.
But also because it's our 10th year, we've got 10 boxes of chocolates to give away to the 10 runners-up. So there's a real incentive for people to come down, even if they miss the odd night or two, because they might still get a box of chocolates.
Now, you can go online to Beyond Church to check out which hut is open every night and also to see the photographs and the themes. So if you miss one, you've got all those lovely photographs to catch up
We blog every night, so along with photographs. So beyondchurch.blogspot.co.uk is the blog, and you can look back over the previous years and all the different huts we've had over the years. But the actual schedule is on beyondchurch.co.uk.
Now, as well as going online, you've also got cards that are promoting a hut each night, and they're the ones you can get stamped when you come down. So where can we pick those up, Martin?
So this flyer's gone out all over the city, mainly through the schools. The schools have been really good because they understand this is a great family community event. So lots of local schools have sent them home with their children. Most local churches will have a pack of flyers that you can pick up from the church. And then there are a few places, few shops like City Books and Western Road have some. I know the council have got some. I will take some down to the seafront office at one point. I'll leave some here if people want to drop into the open market and pick some up at Radio Reverb.
Yep, great. And I think we should share the love and spread them all around the place because it's so good. So, of course, it's a true Advent calendar and it starts at the 1st of December.
Yep.
So it always, to me, it's the start of Christmas. I know it's Advent, it's about waiting, but you do get that sense of that build-up, that waiting for Christmas. There is a brand new Advent calendar that you can also purchase, Martin, this year to celebrate 10 years.
Yes, we produced one right back at the beginning and we thought we'd do a new one as it's our 10th. So this is a beautiful printed Advent calendar that's freestanding, so it's three-dimensional, so quite unique design. It features 24 huts, and the doors in the huts open, and behind each door is a photograph from the last 10 years, some of the best photographs that we've collected over the last 10 years.
I'm being sneaky, I'm
always you go ahead.
You open your presents, don't you, before Christmas Day? You're
no,
one of those
people. I never do those.
Oh, right.
Who said? Who was talking?
So they're £5 each.
They are, that's right, and they're available through our website. There's a shop section on our website at beyondchurch.co.uk, or again, you can buy them in City Books or Beauty Expert on Western Road. And a few other places are stocking them as well. Fullerton's at Seven Dials. Or just, you know, get the contact information for us off the website and email me and I'll get some to you somehow.
Okay, that is just great. So we'll also have some photographs that you can find up on the Radio Reverb Facebook page of what the Advent calendar looks like. Mm-hmm. And I'm also going to post up there a photograph of each hut that's open every night as well. See if we can get that up on the Facebook as well, which would be really, really good. Now, of course, every night you go down, there's mulled wine and mince pie. So you really are the king of mulled wine making now. You serve thousands every year.
Yes. I think I should do the maths again, but I produce something like 3,000 litres of mulled wine a year or something mad. It's
that sounds good.
Yeah. And it's all free. That's what's that's the great thing. It's part of the community event that we, you know, we don't think we need to be charging for these things.
You must be the master of mulled wine.
I've got a pretty good recipe after 10 years.
Do you have a specific secret ingredient?
Well, I'm not going to tell anybody what it is.
Okay, I might go and give it a try.
Otherwise, it's not a secret, is it?
And you have to go down to try it out. And I must at least have had a quarter of that amount of mulled wine from going down. So please, we do urge, if you've never been down, it is a sheer joy of all ages. We'll just get such a kick out of it. It really does bring the magic of the season alive. And now, Martin, one of the things, of course, it is mince pies as well as the mulled wine. Last year we had you doing a blind test of supermarket mince pies, but this year people are doing something different. There's little bits of fusions going on with the cake baking. So Mr. Kipling has decided to do Mr. Kipling Exceeding Good Cakes, two ice-top mince pies. So it's a bit of a Bakewell approach. So try something out here.
You're a pure mince pie to me.
You're a pure mince pie man. And Michaela, see what you think there. Whoa.
It's
a bit crumbly.
I do like icing stuff on a cake, so I'm sure this is going to be something I will enjoy.
So, so Martin's having a good nibble there. So, what do we reckon?
Actually, it is nice. It's not... I thought it might be very sweet because of the icing. But it's not as sweet as you think.
So, if you have to rate it from 1 to 10...
I would give it a 7.
A 7 out of 10. So take another bite there for the camera, which we're going to put up on Facebook page, so you can actually see that, yes, the taste test is happening. And Martin's spilling it all
dropping
over.
Dropping it everywhere.
But that's a sign of a good cake, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It just crumbles all over you. You make a mess and it all goes down. So are you ready for number two to break one off here?
Yeah.
This is from the patisserie at the open market, just as you approach from the London Road end. Now, what they've done is that they've made it with a Viennese topping.
Ah.
So, yes, rather than a Viennese swirl, it is a Viennese mince pie.
So
these are £1 a piece, and they're freshly made for the patisserie.
So that's a pastry topping. It's quite thick, isn't it?
It's quite thick. It is, yeah. So what do we reckon?
It's lovely pastry, but there's a lot of it.
Okay.
Because of the top, because the Viennese top is so thick. I think, do you want to have a go, Michaela? No.
Are you missing the mints?
Actually, it's got a nice...
Need more mince pie?
It's got a really nice aftertaste, actually. I don't know where that's coming from.
Would that be the icing sugar?
I would like to... I'd like a bit more mints.
Okay, a bit more mints. Mm. And, well, you can try another bite there, Martin, and just see, you know, beyond the taste test. But, you know, the whole thing is mince pies are a tradition, aren't they, for Christmas time? And, you know, we get all the chefs bringing them up on the television. And just look out for something different, or are you just a traditionalist? I have to say, I am a traditionalist with the old mince pie.
Yeah.
You ever do your own?
I do, but I like to make them with puff pastry.
Oh, nice.
And that's nice and flaky. So that's what I'll be making this Christmas.
That's my favourite mince pie, is the puff pastry. I really like puff pastry.
And this year, have you got... where are your mince pies coming from? Do you do the taste test, actually, to choose them, Martin?
No, I'm afraid we go for the price test is how we choose our mince pies. So I usually buy them from the cash and carry.
Okay. Yeah, and you get a nice little nibbly size as well.
Yeah, we get small mini ones. Partly because we discovered that because there's so many kids come, and quite often a full-size mince pie, the children will take a couple of bites and then discard the rest, and it's a bit of a waste. Mm. So we get the small ones, which don't really have as much mince in them as I would like, but they're good, nice bite-sized.
And people can come back for a second.
Yeah, absolutely.
As many do.
Yes.
Well, mulled wine and mince pies are being served on the Brighton seafront throughout the whole of December between 5:30 and 6:30 with Martin Poole and all the team of Beyond Church, and there'll be a different hut open every night. Don't forget that you can go along to the Beyond website or look out at City Books and other traders where they will have the Advent little cards so that you can see which hut is open every night. Please do enjoy the stroll on the seafront and your mulled wine and mince pies. And Martin, thank you as always for coming and launching the season with us here on the Food and Drink Show on Radio Reverb. Many thanks.
Hang all the mistletoe, I'm gonna get to know you better. This Christmas, and as we trim the tree, how much fun it's gonna be. This Christmas, fireside is blazing bright. We're caroling through the night, and this Christmas will be a very special Christmas for me.
The lovely Vonda Shepherd there, and oh, it makes me feel so Christmassy. That is my annual anthem as it's leading up to Christmas, and of course just simply titled This Christmas Ideal, having had Martin Poole from Beyond Church talking about the launch of the Advent calendars. And if you can, don't forget it starts on December the 1st, runs all the way up to Christmas Eve, 5:30 to 6:30 in the evening on the Brighton seafront, a different beach hut every night. How cool is that? Mulled wine and mince pies as well. It does and get better. Hi there, my name is Karen Morton. This is the Food and Drink Show on Radio Reverb, and I'm also joined by Michaela Makalanova, and we've also got a very special guest in the show today. We are talking about energy in, energy out, and we're going a bit nuts as well, aren't we, Michaela?
We're going all the way into the nuts.
So, you take us away, girl.
So we've got in the studio with us Daryl Sutcliffe today, and Daryl is going to... Hello, Daryl.
Hi.
So you're going to explain to us on the board, tell us a little bit about the project you've decided to undertake, the reasons behind it.
So what I'm doing is I'm going to be running the Brighton Marathon next year. Nothing unusual there. I'm going to follow that up the following week with London Marathon. Again, that's been done before. But in between, I am running circa 250 miles the long way to London via animal sanctuaries, via rescue homes, and all things animal welfare related.
Okay. In my books, that's completely nuts and absolutely insane. So why?
I think in most people's books, actually, Michaela, that's completely insane. The reason why, I've done a few marathons in the past. It's a fundraising project. And I felt to validate the fundraising, I had to do something over and above running a marathon, which I do quite regularly.
Well, I guess no one can disagree with you or argue that this is a little bit over the top. So I'm assuming the training is really hard as well to get to that point too.
Interestingly, the training is hard. Yes, of course it is. It's not that much harder than a traditional marathon. It's different rather than harder. It does take longer, but the actual process and the principles behind it is very, very similar.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm assuming because of what you have to do, there is going to be a lot of things you have to look after, especially your body, your nutrition, and what you're planning to basically eat in a process to get your body fit and ready for this.
Absolutely. I'm a personal trainer. I'm a nutritionist. And consequently, I'm very aware of what needs to go into my body to actually fuel me for these runs, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm hoping you're going to be able to give us a recipe which you've already created, or you've got an inspiration for a few recipes, especially for energy bars, and we're going to have a little bit of sample tasting in the studio as well.
Thank you.
Sample tasting going on. Mm. I love it. So energy bars to help us whenever we're sort of exuding that energy out. Mm. Okay. And we would love a little bit of feedback if you are planning to do anything as daring as what Daryl is doing next year. Daryl's going to be coming back into the studio in 1919. Daryl is going to be giving you lots of nutritional advice. So we will have the energy bars coming up after this, what I think is a very appropriate song. It's not really the appropriate time of year, but it's certainly the appropriate song. And it comes from the Beach Boys. So let's see if you know what the title is. think you may have guessed the title of that song. It's Wild Honey and the Beach Boys. And kind of Wild Honey is pretty appropriate, really, because we are talking about energy, about cooking and making energy bars here on the Food and Drink Show with Michaela and Daryl. So tell us more about these energy bars.
Well, the ones I've brought in for you guys to taste today are protein-based. I've used pecans, I've used walnuts, I've used Brazil nuts, I've used cashew, I've used peanuts. But you can use any nuts that you like. It's the key ingredient here is the nuts. Nuts are really high in protein, really good in the monounsaturate and the polyunsaturate, the good fats that we need.
And when would we be eating sort of these protein bars? When is the best time to eat them?
If we actually consider these to be a recovery bar, it's probably a good way of describing them. So post-exercise. It doesn't mean you can't use them during exercise, but because they are protein heavy, they won't get into the bloodstream as quickly as a more fruit-based stroke sugar-based bar of this nature. So when you finish your run, when you finish your exercise, whatever exercise that be, something like this will really help the recovery and fuel you to do it again.
So you've mentioned the main ingredients are nuts. What else goes into these bars?
They are nuts. In the bars that I've got in front of me, now the actual raw ingredients you can use to your own taste palette. Fundamentally, what you need is you need nuts for the protein content. So I've also got coconut in there. You need some oats because oats are also quite good for protein, but also act really well as a binding agent. I've got a little bit of vanilla just for a hint of sweetness. I've got peanut butter for stickiness. And I've got traditional butter and honey to act as a glue to keep it all together.
Mentioning honey, would you put normal sugar in there or do you use honey just to make it more natural?
Would use ordinary honey. Traditional sugar doesn't have that binding, that stickiness.
So it's not because of nutritional value, it's just more to get its stickiness going on.
Yeah, in this instance.
Fair enough. So you've mentioned it's a post-training. Can you make very similar bars, kind of pre-training or during training?
Absolutely. You just take out two-thirds of the nuts and put some sort of dried fruit in. I really like it with banana. So you mash down a banana and you use that as the glue with some dried fruit. And those are the kind of bars that you can take with you during your exercise because they will actually help fuel in the moment because that sugar that you're taking in from the fruit will go into the system quite quickly and allow you to perform well. However, one thing that I need to mention here, and a mistake that a lot of the novices make when talking about nutrition, is it takes about 20 minutes for this to actually hit the fuel system.
All right.
So if you're going to make these bars, and by the time you're hungry, it's too late. You need to practice eating whilst moving and eat before you're hungry. So you use this as fuel.
I'm assuming that comes with the practice anyway. You need to know your body and what your body's going to do in a specific time. I'm assuming that's
absolutely
what we're talking about here.
Absolutely. And to give you an analogy, if you were driving from here to London, you wouldn't put the petrol in at London.
Okay.
You'd put it here in Brighton to fuel your journey. You don't hope for the best and don't look at the petrol gauge.
Now I'm going to ask you another question because these supermarkets are at the moment filled with various different bars and protein bars and all of this kind of stuff. Why would we make our own bar instead of buying one?
Why would we make our own bar? Right from the beginning, I told you that I was doing a project for conservation, etc., etc. That's what I'm fundraising for. So these sort of things are quite close to my heart. Things like palm sugar and palm oil is everywhere, which is particularly environmentally callous. I'm also vegetarian, so I can control what goes into these. From a cost perspective, we're looking about the same price per portion as the better ones, but without necessarily the video nasties that are going into this. You can manage everything that's going in there, and also you can pack it up into your bag and take it with you. The portion that I make I make a big vat and it's a tray. I can get 15 to 18 bars, depending on how much I'm cooking from them. And they'll freeze down, so you can keep them in the freezer too.
So it's not necessarily a cheaper option. It's probably the same, as you mentioned, as the really good high-quality one. But it's more about controlling what you're eating, what you're putting in there.
Yeah, from a cost perspective, I would guess they come out somewhere between 75 pence to 125 per portion, depending on your nut content. Nuts are expensive, so the more nuts you have in it, the higher these are going to go. If you're going to make the fruit-based versions, then they will come down significantly lower. Okay. But they are better because you're controlling the ingredients. And you know, play around with these things. So, you know, if you don't like banana, put something else in. If you particularly like cranberries, put those in. Use seasonal produce, you know, and give this... Give yourself the best opportunity to use the best fuel you can.
Okay. So I can see you brought us some to the studio and Karen is already having a little nibble.
I have been eating my way through. I have, you know, they are just so delicious. And this, you can just, the nuts and the seeds... And there's a lovely crumbliness to it. I mean, and the fact you can make 10 at a time.
18 out of this batch, yeah.
See, I'd have all those gone. I'd need to run the 200 miles because I'd eat them all in one sitting. They're so good. What's the secret to making them, Darren?
There is no secret. It's ingredients into a bowl, blitz to a level where you're comfortable with the texture. If you don't like crunchy, then blitz down to a flour. If you prefer crunchy, don't blitz quite as much. Roll it out onto a baking tray, stick it in the oven 20 minutes out. The thing is, don't be tempted to eat them straight out of the oven because we get that hard crumbliness by the butter setting once they've cooled. So, and from start to finish, it's half an hour, if that.
Fantastic. Really tasty. I can taste a little bit of salt in there. Is there a salt added to those things?
All I've done is I've gone over the top with a twist of salt just to give it a slightly savoury tone.
Oh, it definitely is, and that was really good that you picked that up there. And I'm definitely getting the sort of like the poppy seeds coming through. The thing you got there is that poppy seeds.
There's poppy seeds. There's sunflower seeds. There's loads of seeds in there. Again, delicious. A bag of mixed seeds. Quarter of that in there.
It's really, really tasty.
It's so good. It's
proper
so good.
Nuts.
I got to make this. So this is the one that you're going to eat full of protein to recover, to revive yourself, and add more fruit in it, as you were saying, if you're going to use it beforehand because of the carbohydrate.
Yes.
Now, you have recipes that you can share with our listeners. So where do we go for top tips about if we are taking part in something like what you're taking part in, marathons and all the rest of it?
Okay. So validate this project, I myself have put on a little bit of timber to show that with the right nutrition, with the right training, at the right times, that weight loss is achievable without it being too traumatic. You know, weight loss is about eating the right things at the right time and exercising the right amounts. And if anybody out there that's listening that's thinking about doing Brighton Marathon next year or any of the runs, as a trainer, I often get told that I've started training and I put weight on. Just because you're training, it doesn't mean that you can just go and have a free-for-all food-wise. So if you want to follow the recipes, I will be doing once a week, once a fortnight, I'll be putting on a week's worth of recipes. And that can be found at www.wwf300miles.co.uk. Facebook and Instagram, same handle.
That's fantastic. Really easy and such a good cause as well too. And I love the fact the way that you're going to be running around and visiting animal sanctuaries and animal rescue centres as well, really getting the message across with the runs that you're doing. It's quite something.
Absolutely. Again, if you go to the Facebook page, which is Facebook WWF 300 miles, one word, I'll be starting a training session in December where you can just come down, no charge. I'm going to be doing it. If you want to follow along, please feel free. I'm also going to encourage people to come running some of the legs with me between the two marathons. Obviously, I can't get them involved in the marathons. And if you want to come along, do that. And at any of the social networks or other website, you can find out more information. Please come and chat to me and I'll tell you all about it. I'm incredibly evangelistic about this project, so I'll tell anybody that listens.
But you can also, for people doing their own thing as well too, and wanting to understand more about nutrition or whatever, if they go along to your Facebook page, then you'll interact and you can give tips and advice.
Ask me a question and I'll answer it. I think that's probably the best thing. Yeah.
Now, Daryl is going to be back with us again in the new year. And please do go to the Radio Reverb website. You can email us. And if you would have any comments or questions that you would like to put to Daryl in our sort of question time in the new year, then please do so. And we'll be sharing some more top tips on what to cook up for all that energy. And it, you are nuts. You do realise
that
you are nuts. Well, thank you very much for joining us here on the Food and Drink Show. And my name is Karen Morton. We've got Michaela in the studio. We've got Daryl in the studio. We've had Martin Poole from Beyond Church. And very soon we're going to be talking about some ideas for Christmas so you can plan ahead. So you are listening to the Food and Drink Show here on Radio Reverb.
What am I supposed to do with this time? It tears so many holes, I stay afloat, but I'm feel out of control, so petrified, I'm petrified. What am I supposed to do to get by? Did I lose everything I need to survive? Cause at 4 a.m. and the sweat sets in, did you get my message, did it send? Or did you just get on with your life? Oh. Did it send, or do you get along?
That was Maroon 5 and Runaway. Well, of course, we had to play Runaway, especially there for Daryl Sutcliffe, as he's about to do something quite incredible in 2018. Not just running one marathon, but sort of running about three back to back, covering hundreds of miles in aid of WWF. And don't forget that we will be having all the recipes up for you on www.wwf300miles.co.uk, and you can pick up all the recipes that Daryl is cooking for energy in, for all that energy going out. And he's also open to hearing any of your advice and top tips, but also if you need top tips if you're running and raising money next year. So, talking about energy in and energy out, we've just had a blast of new, fresh energy in. We have got Stephen Edwards, who's just come into the studio, to tell us all about a new cookbook which has come out for Christmas. And I know that certainly I'm going to be buying one or two of them, I think, as a special gift. Stephen, very welcome to the Radio Reverb studio.
Hi there, how are you doing?
So it's lovely to see you. And what is particularly nice is that this cookbook that we're talking about, it's based in Brighton and Sussex. It's restaurants and food producers, all local. And I don't know of anything like that quite happening in the same way before.
Yeah, what drew me to it is it's independent businesses and the range of it. So it's anything from the fine dining restaurants like myself all the way to coffee shops, cafes and even like chip shops. So there's recipes for everyone, I believe.
Chip shops as well. You've got to have the old chip shops in there, and you can tell us more about that. Now, Stephen, you're actually from the restaurant called Etch, which started up about 7 months ago, I believe. Is that right?
That's right. We're based over in Hove, and it's going well. We do tasting menu only and really focus on using Sussex produce. So we really want to put Sussex food on the map.
Well, we like the sound of that. Talking about Sussex food, we'll just take a look at the Brighton and Sussex cookbook. It's very colourful in design. Do you know much about the sort of the art behind the book?
I don't know too much, but I knew it would be reflective of the culture of in Brighton and Hove, and I think it needed to be colourful to do that. There's some great artists, and it's such a creative city.
It you just know when you look at it, it's Brighton and Hove. You've got the pavilion on the front, you've got the deck chairs and the seafront, so it's very definitely Brighton. Now, how did the cookbook come about?
Really, it was just through a mutual friend. I knew that the cookbook was successful in other cities around the country, and I just jumped at the chance to be part of something involving the whole of Brighton and Sussex.
Because this is a formula, isn't it, that there's a publisher that has created cookbooks from around the UK, and I think that is lovely because you can actually, you know, if you're from Yorkshire, you know, you can actually go to the website and you'll find a cookbook that's bringing out all the producers local to certain towns in Yorkshire or Birmingham or wherever it might be. But we're particularly focused here on the Brighton and Sussex one. Now, how did sort of the contributors come about? Because we've hundreds of great restaurants, cafes and food producers. So how did the selection come?
Yeah, so they were selected by the publisher, which is Meze Publishing. And again, it was really important that they're independent and they're high quality establishments. So there was no control over whether they're a restaurant or a cafe, but just a wide selection of quality establishments.
So give us a taste for some of the contributors in the book.
So for me, one of my favourites is Bee Fries. So I don't know if you've heard of them.
Yes.
Such a great concept. I like the single origin concept. So just to do fries is really brave, and they do it well. Lots of dips. So for them to have a recipe in there is quite inspiring, I think. You've also got restaurants like Isaac Hatt, myself, and lots of other great restaurants and cafes in there.
Now, Michaela has the cookbook in front of her there, and just thinking about Bee Fries, the lovely thing is that you go in and you get all the dips to do with their fries, and they're sort of telling you how to cook a good French fry, a good chip, as well as some hints about be creative with the sauces. Don't go for the good old traditional
I'm quite a massive
tomato.
Fan of Bee Fries. I've been there several times. Because of their sauces constantly changing, you always feel like you're having different meal, although you're just having chips. Simple meal as a chip always changes because you're putting different dips on it. So, yeah, I'm a massive, massive keen fan of their business. I think they're fabulous.
I think it's the future. I think do something simple and do it well. And, you know, that's what we believe at Etch as well. It's so brave to do that. I know when I was in there last, you know, they were trying, you know, experimenting with fish and stuff. But I was like, don't mess about with the fish. Just do the chips, you know, because that's what they're going to be famous for.
That's a great idea because their reputation goes before them now, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And such a lovely vibe in that place as well. I think they're very keen to speak to their customers.
Yeah.
That's what I find every time I go there. When I ask them if they have something special, they're very keen and happy to explain where they're getting these things from and how they're getting the ideas on board. So, yeah.
Now, you've also got Hisby's, which is the sort of independent supermarket on the London Road, which is very close to us here at Radio Reverb in the open market. And they've put in what's become very fashionable this year is actually cooking a cauliflower, slicing it and cooking it like a steak.
Yep.
So they've got a great recipe in there. Have you tried that yourself, Stephen?
Yeah, I've always been a big fan of using humble ingredients. So something like a cauliflower, I think, before these recipes were coming about, everyone just thought either cauliflower cheese or just boiling it. Mm. And that's quite boring. But to just treat it differently, to roast it in the oven with a little bit of butter and thyme really brings out more of a nutty flavour in the cauliflower, I think. And again, it's utilising vegetables more rather than the main protein. Mm. And again, at Etch, we believe in that. It's not all about like the meat and the fish. It should be about the vegetable, because there's enough, a lot of work goes into growing that.
Mm. There is, and also to prepare vegetables in a nice way, rather than just steaming or boiling, you can bring lots of flavours out, as you said. And for vegetarians like Michaela as well, too, you're looking for something really substantial on your plate, and that cauliflower can just do it for you. Now, also the book has got cocktails.
Yep.
Suggestions in there, and Michaela, if you want to just locate the beautiful page with the cocktail on it, we were drooling at the mouth. We're going to have for all our listeners, we're going to have pictures up on the Radio Reverb Facebook page, because here in the Food and Drink Show, it's important, isn't it, if you hear about something, you want to see what it actually looks like. The photography in the book is exceptional.
Yeah, it's really good. And like I said, it's the same photographer all the way through. He's well established in Brighton, and I think that's important. But also back to the cocktail point, I think, you know, like we said, it's not a recipe book that's out of anyone's reach. You know, if you want to go for more fine dining recipes, you've got them. You've got cocktail recipes in there. You've got cakes. You know, there's a recipe for everyone. And I think that's what's important when creating a book like that, that it is accessible and it's not out of someone's reach.
Absolutely. And then what you can also do, if you are entertaining, you could say, right, we've got something to drink, we've got starters, we've got puddings, you know, cakes, we've got everything in there. Now, tell us about the recipe that you've put in, Stephen.
Yeah. So it's a recipe called sea trout and cucumber. So in the restaurant, I really just write the menu with two words. So that's how it's described. But I really want those two ingredients to stand out. And again, like the cauliflower, cucumber's often overlooked. It's pretty much in everyone's fridge, but then it's normally just sliced and diced and then put through a salad. So what we do a cucumber ketchup, cucumber sorbet, roasted cucumber, and yeah, a little bit of compressed cucumber on there as well. So we haven't actually just sliced and diced it. We've made it into a focal point.
Never heard of roasted cucumber before.
Yeah, it's delicious. Take out the seeds, peel the skin, and then just roast it similar to how you would the cauliflower, and it's delicious.
And how long do you roast it for in the oven?
You don't need to do that for very long. It's about 3 or 4 minutes. It's only just to make it a little bit more tender and to get good a good colour on it.
Now, do you use olive oil with it, or is there another type of oil that you would toss it in when it's going into roast?
Yeah, it's normally just a pomace oil, so just a light fragrant oil. I always prefer using those sort of oils for roasting rather than dressing, where you use your extra virgins or rapeseed oil.
So how are you coming up with the recipes? Is it something you've been inspired by other people, or are you just experimenting with different ingredients?
It's a little bit of both. For me, you know, I've been a chef for 16 years, so I've got a massive collection of recipes individually, but what I like to do is just look at flavour combinations. You know, I love the thought of, you know, this was a summer dish, so sea trout with the fresh cucumber. It just feels quite refreshing. It's not an out there combination, but then I look back through my recipes that I've learned, and I just think, right, what can I do with the sea trout to make it stand out? What can I do with the cucumber? So instead of doing 5 or 6 different ingredients, we try and just use 2 main ones and really let them jump out on the plate.
I love what you've done there with taking cucumber and sort of preparing it in 4 different ways, serving it on a plate, and you're going to get not just the flavour from the trout, but the cucumber in a different variety all in, on the plate. It's an explosion of taste really in the mouth. I can, as you're talking about it, I'm tasting that freshness and the balance with the trout. Lovely, delicate flavours.
Yeah, but I just, you know, a lot of the suppliers, whether they're meat or fish, they get quite a lot of the credit. And I just think, you know, if you're a farmer and you're growing vegetables like the cucumber, the carrot or beetroot, you know, they deserve the credit as well. It shouldn't just be lost on the plate. It should be about the vegetable just as much as it should be about the protein, I believe.
Oh, yes. Now, Michaela, have you got a favourite in the cookbook?
Well, I've just found something that caught my eye, and it's in Metro Deco. It's called Chili Tea Cocktail. I love my teas anyway, so mixing cocktail with a tea, why not?
Absolutely.
Sounds good dangerous.
Doesn't it? You know, but also very refreshing. Oh, we've got all that liquid going on in
so
there.
I can read you the ingredients if you like, because I was caught by it, as I said, and I'm going to share with this with the listeners as well. So for the rum, someone like it hot, chili and mint tea. So you put 2 red chilies, 700 milliliters of white rum, And for the cocktail, you put infused rum, sugar syrup, few mint leaves, and 2 pieces of fresh lime with crushed ice and soda water to top it up. What's not to love, right?
Wow. Wow. So, well, you've got to love chilies, haven't you, if you're going to have that one. So you've got all the heat coming out there for the season, which is leading up to Christmas. Now, there are just so many cookbooks always launched for Christmas by all of the top leading, you know, sort of chefs from TV and radio and all the rest of it there. But it's just so lovely to have this local cookbook. Mm. And what could be better from Brighton and Sussex, which is just delightful. Now, where can we pick up the book and how much is it, Stephen?
So it's £15. It's available probably easiest on Amazon, but it's also available in everyone that's in the cookbook as well, and a few small bookstores in Brighton and Sussex.
But City Books being one of them,
yeah,
I believe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think the easiest nowadays is online shopping. But
yeah, online. Go to Amazon. I know City Books, and I believe Waterstones as well has it there too. So it's going to be very easy to find. And City Books have come out very well today on the show because they're also, they've got the Advent Beach Hut calendars for sale, where we've got, you know, the mulled wine and mince pies on the seafront every night. We've got the Brighton and Sussex cookbook. It's just coming in at £15. You can order it on Amazon or go along to City Books. Keep an eye out for it. And we've also got more traders from the open market appearing in there, also in the cookbook, which is very exciting. So we've got Sparrows in there, and they've got a really tasty recipe. If you like garlic, you're going to love theirs because they just love their garlic, and it's sort of vegetarian and vegan food. So there's something in there for everybody, isn't there, Stephen?
Yes, and I think that's important. And I also believe it's a true reflection on the city. And like I keep saying, sometimes cookbooks always go one way or another, you know, whether they're vegetarian, vegan or, you know, meat heavy. This is so diverse, just like the city that we're part of. And I think, you know, even as a Christmas present, this is the perfect sort of book for you. You can go around, go to all the different, you know, almost go on a little treasure hunt with it.
It feels like a guidebook of a local restaurants and coffee shops. That's what it sounds like to me.
It is actually. It is a mixture, isn't it, of being a cookbook to try at home yourself, but also it is like a foodie trail that you can take. And it'll introduce you to either the independent sort of supermarket like Hisby's on the London Road. You can talk to everybody there about some maybe unusual or fresh produce. Come to the open market, have you know, falafels there from Sparrows. You can go to yourself at Etch on the London Road when you're wanting to have something a little bit special and having your taster menus. Talk to you about what you're doing. It's lovely. It gives, it inspires you really to know more about your city. And I've got a couple of people that have moved, a couple of friends that have moved to Brighton in the last 6 months who had lived all their lives in Bath. So for me, this is going to be the ideal Christmas present to give to them. And that's
not that you
want to
spoil the surprise.
But it is a nice thing, isn't it, to give. So it's kind of like that tourist guide. Mm. It's a little local treasure, really, of a cookbook. Now, Stephen, the fact that you're sort of a working chef yourself and we are now sort of in the winter season, what sort of things are you cooking up?
So the first course on the menu at the moment is celeriac and truffle, and I love it to bits. It's a roasted celeriac soup with a little bit of roast celery in there as well, which is part of the same family. And then just finish with some autumn truffle on the top. But it's just like a real warming dish, a good one to start with. It's great.
I've noticed the celeriac is kind of making appearance back into the menus in few places. It was forgotten vegetable for many, many years, what I found. But slowly, few restaurants, such as yourself, start experimenting with the vegetable.
Yeah, like I said, the vegetables should play a big part. And instead of, you know, I think what was happening to the celeriac, it's always just getting chopped up with carrots and onions and then just roasted with some mushrooms and stuff. It's almost lost in there. But I think, like I said, it's always important to bring it to the front.
There's a very definite taste to it. I think there's a fear factor around it as a vegetable for cooking.
Yeah.
And people saying, I'm not really quite sure how to cook it, because sometimes when you're roasting it, it can kind of get shrivelly or dried up and lose it. So have you any tips on cooking it as a vegetable?
Yeah, definitely butter. Butter helps. I know it's not the healthiest thing, but just by coating it in the butter and not roasting it for too long. I know it's not the most attractive vegetable when you're looking around the supermarket, but honestly, it's so full of flavour. And it's really affordable as well. But do a bit of the cooking in a pan first. So heat your pan, a little little bit of oil, get the colour, and then just finish with a little bit of butter and thyme, and then just roast for 4 or 5 minutes. That's all you need. Because I think what people tend to do is just chop it and then roast it for 20 or 25, and that's where you get the burnt bits, or like you said, it goes a little bit dry and crispy.
Now, if you're going to serve it as a vegetable to go with the main course, which is either meat or fish, what does it go good with?
It definitely goes well with both meat and fish. But for me, it's either like a white fish like sea bream or sea bass, or a meat, something like guinea fowl, chicken and celeric is really, really good. A little bit of sage or thyme on there. Just thinking about that third flavour, like in the restaurant, like I said, it's the two ingredients. But think about that third herb that might come through and bring it all together. So chicken and celeric has got me thinking now for my next menu.
So there's the top tip coming there now from Stephen Edwards from Etch, is think about the third ingredient. So you've got your two, you've got your meat, your fish, your vegetable, and think about the third ingredient, which is going to be a herb. So that's a nice tip when we're cooking over Christmas. What three things can you not live without in a kitchen, Stephen?
So number one would have to be scales. I'm just OCD about everything. So if you ask my team, I just write every recipe down and everything's weighed out. So even the liquid in recipes. So instead of doing millilitres, I just convert it to grams. So it's really precise, but it almost makes it foolproof if you can. Next would probably be my Pacojet. And that's a bit... that's a bit out there in terms of equipment. It's quite expensive.
What is a Pacojet?
Yeah, I was just about to ask the same question. Never heard of it.
Mine's a wooden spoon.
Yeah, so it basically churns ice creams and sorbets to order. So instead of churning before service and then putting it in the freezer and then watching it slowly get harder and harder and then, you know, be unmanageable, what you do, you freeze it solid. So there's no churning at all. So something like a blackberry sorbet, you'll just set solid in a metal container. So it's rock hard. And then what it does, it's got a gold blade on it that basically whizzes down through the container and then churns it into a sorbet. But for me, you know, I love it to bits because it's the consistency again. I'm not having to wait and then churn ice creams and sorbets every day. I can put it in there. It saves on waste and it's a great bit of kit.
Well, and the third thing.
I don't even know what questions to ask because I'm completely blown by that.
Yeah, I guess the third thing would be like my induction hobs. They're all like plug in. I can take them anywhere when I do dinner parties. I just plug in and go. And they're just so easy to use. Wipe down and go.
Well, there we go. Three very different things I never thought a chef was going to tell me in the studio, and you've just blown us away. So should I be putting those on my Christmas list?
Yeah, maybe you might need to save up a bit for the Pacojet, but, you know, definitely the scales. It's an easy one because we all struggle with, like, when the recipe says 70 millilitres of water, just remember, it converts straight to grams, so that's another top tip. Just do 70 grams. It's a lot easier than rather than putting it on your windowsill, looking whether it's 70, 75. Just put it on the scale, 70 grams, and you're done.
Some top tips there from Stephen Edwards from Etch Restaurant. Thank you so much for joining us here in the Food and Drink Show and for sharing the wonderful new cookbook, the Brighton and Sussex Cookbook, which is available on Amazon and also in bookshops in Brighton and Hove as well. It's a great stocking filler for Christmas. Beautiful photographs, delicious recipes, and you are supporting local independent businesses as well. Thank you very much for joining us today.
No, thank you.
Sleigh bells ring.
Sleigh bells ring.
Are you listening?
Are you listening?
In the lane.
In the lane.
Snow is glistening.
Snow is glistening.
A beautiful sight. We're happy tonight. Walking in a winter wonderland. Gone away. Is the bluebird here to stay? Is a new bird. He sings a love song as we go along, walking in a winter wonderland.
Well, that's all we have time for today on the Food and Drink Show. I hope you've enjoyed all the tasty treats that we have given you. Martin Poole from Beyond Church telling us all about mulled wine and mince pies on the Brighton seafront every night in December between 5:30 and 6:30. Check out the Beyond website for more information. Also to Daryl Sutcliffe for sharing his delicious protein energy bars. And if you would like the recipes and more recipes about energy fueling foods for running marathons, then go to www.wwf300miles.co.uk. To Stephen Edwards from Etch, telling us all about the Brighton and Sussex cookbook and all the delicious recipes that you can find in there, available in all good bookshops and on Amazon. To Michaela Makalanova for joining me in the studio, welcoming all our lovely guests. December show will be all about the honey and some nice teas. We will also be having a little Indian flavour for Christmas, something a little bit different, and some boozy treats as well. So see you then. Bye.
In the meadow we can build a snowman,
snowman,
and pretend that he is Parson Brown.